Sit back, relax, and enjoy as Don Tony gives you news and reviews from AEW, NXT, and indie wrestling too.
Know what's happening in the world of wrestling without the hate and clickbait.
It's Wednesday night, Dynamite.
And now, your host, Don Tony.
All right. It is Wednesday night, March 16th, 2022. We are back once again for Wednesday Night Dynamite. I am Don Tony. As always, AEW Dynamite just went off the air. Congratulations. Go out to Thunder Rosa. Yes, I think it was obviously very predictable. Her adopted hometown, San Antonio, Texas, with all of the bullshit that's been going on for months and months and months with the antics of outside interference. But she finally has done it. She is the new AEW Women's Champion. And that kind of like takes a little pressure off of Jade Cargill a little bit. Because one of the things about Jade Cargill being 29-0, when you actually look at a majority of her opponents, almost everybody that was like considered for the tournament, for the first ever champion, all seemed to be absent. But I like it. It's about time. My thoughts on the cage match, I will talk about it later. But I will say this right now. This is not to take anything away from the ladies. But I saw people tonight, you know, this is giving me Hell in a Cell vibes. You know, this is going to be one of the better cage matches in recent memory. Come on. Are you kidding me? I mean, some of those spots were freaking awful. Not to mention setting up the chairs. And it literally took 45 seconds to set it up, and then, we'll talk about that. Happy 316, everybody. Shout out to Sam, everybody tuning in. So tonight, we're going to get into some news. We're going to briefly run down Dynamite, NXT, everything that went down in NXT. If you saw the thumbnail for tonight, yes, this probably should have happened maybe a year ago. Maybe before he came to the main roster with the potted plant and his sexy sister. But Dominic Mysterio wrestling on NXT yesterday. I love it. You know, on this show for 2 years, we talked about how NXT needed to go back to developmental. That, you know, you also need rubs from people on the main roster. I think either a lot of people just do not understand what happens in developmental territories. Even when WWF was doing a little bit with Memphis and sending a wrestler down to get a little bit of work, testing this, you know, just maybe bringing some people up later on. You look at Flex Cavana and others. I mean, look, obviously The Rock is on a different level, and he didn't come into WWF originally as The Rock. I mean, Rocky Maivia was kind of brutal. But the point is, you know, you need some main roster stars to show up. Give a little legitimacy. Give a little bit of a rub. All you got to do is listen or watch the Bron Breakker interview that was done last week. And Bron Breakker saying he is learning so much from Dolph Ziggler. He is learning so much from Tommaso Ciampa. He's learning so much from Robert Roode. He is soaking it all in. This is necessary. You can't just have coaches be the veterans. No, you want to bring people. So to see Miz TV yesterday, and honestly, I thought that was hilarious. LA Knight, I think we all agree, LA Knight should be on this main roster. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. You know, I don't want to call it the land of the giants, but it's very easy for all of us to say, oh my God, LA Knight, why isn't he on Raw? Why isn't he on SmackDown? And what would he be doing right now? Especially on the road to WrestleMania. Remember a couple of years ago, it became a little infamous when Finn Balor was really stuck in the mud, and when I was doing the show with another co-host, you know, I just said, wait till WrestleMania. No reason to blow their load with Finn Balor, with Mania coming up. Other people have those spots. Wait. Let Mania happen. No need to blow your load with Finn Balor. I know that sounds a little inappropriate, but sure enough, about a month after Mania, Finn Balor, they gave him the push, and the rest is history. LA Knight right now would probably fall into a similar category, coming out, cutting promos, but, you know, who is he going to leapfrog to get that kind of spotlight? So, you know, we all agree he's main roster quality. Right now, you know, with the road to WrestleMania, no reason to rush it. No reason to rush it. Oh, my God, Kevin. Kevin. A-Kid, spectacular debut last night against Kushida. I'm telling you, go watch some of his NXT UK stuff. You will be extremely impressed with A-Kid. So, I mean, you look at NXT. The ratings are, see, the ratings obviously are not impressive. Low sixes, middle sixes is really, you know, not all that spectacular. But what's happening now is you have a consistent number. And what WWE is doing is they are not focusing on the numbers, and they are focusing on just letting some of these wrestlers try to become stars. You know some of those wrestlers in NXT that are going to make it. You could see it. There are a few that still have a lot of work to go. And then there's a few, and you know, that kind of seem to be stuck. But with, again, the road to WrestleMania, and even on Patreon, Mitch and I had a conversation Tuesday. You look at someone like Raquel Gonzalez or even Io Shirai. I mean, a lot of people want to see Io Shirai on the main roster. But when you see what's going on with the women's roster on Raw and SmackDown, you know, it's very easy for people to say, oh, WWE, you know, they just keep pushing the same people, keep pushing the same people, keep pushing the same. All right, what happens? You bring Io Shirai to the main roster, and now you got to take away a push from Bianca Belair, Rhea Ripley, Sasha Banks. You know, you start running down those names, and you know what those people would say? Oh, look at this shit. They have nothing for Rhea Ripley. Look, they can't even figure out a way to put Sasha Banks on TV. So there's only so many spots available unless you want to have tag teams and trios matches every single time around. So we'll talk about that a little bit more in a few. Tonight we had a treat. I mean, I don't know where all the people were when Jeff Hardy was wrestling in WWE only a couple of months ago. Oh my God, Jeff looks amazing. Huh? I mean, don't get me wrong. I freaking love the Hardys as a tag team. Anybody remembers even when they were doing their stuff in Impact Wrestling, we were freaking loving it. Even though the ratings were not all that spectacular. Look, when you see the Hardys in AEW right now, yes, we have seen them 1,000 times over the years. You're not going to see much invented. The wheel is already there. They're not going to try to reinvent the wheel. But what you look, how you look at this is any of you, if you ever go to, if you have a favorite indie wrestling promotion that is in your town, in your state, that you absolutely love to go to, and what happens with those indie shows? They will bring in some big names for, you know, main events or to try to draw some sales, but also to treat local fans. And, you know, I worked 70 shows when I used to do the indie bullshit stuff. And let me tell you something, you have someone that comes in, big names and, you know, being around. So, I mean, it's larger than life, but not only that, there's that intimate connection. Wow, I'm getting to see the New Age Outlaws in my favorite promotion. And look at this shit. I actually work for that promotion. And holy shit, I'm at the beginning of the show doing awful stuff. But still, it's extra special when people that you love and appreciate and enjoy over the years get to work your favorite promotion. You look at the WWE video game that just came out, and even people that do not like the current WWE product, they're into the video game, and what are they doing? They're making creator wrestlers for every AEW star, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with it because you want to see your favorites perform. And seeing the Hardys in AEW, yeah, we probably would see it on a local indie show if they paid the money. You probably would see Private Party versus the Hardys on an indie show or two. Hell, here in New York, you know, even though Rey Fénix is injured, we just had the Briscoes versus Penta. You know, it was supposed to be the Briscoes versus the Lucha Bros. And, you know, here that's an extra special treat. So AEW getting Jeff Hardy, and if you watch closely at Jeff Hardy, if you watch closely, he's in pain. All those years of him busting his ass and working his ass off, those injuries are there. You could see it. And it's not just him just extra grimacing, you know, for camera purposes. You could see closely that some shots that he does when he lands on his hip, his pelvis, his legs, it hurts. Especially when you're not numbing the pain with alcohol or painkillers. You know, it's rough, man. That is rough. So appreciate, if you're an AEW fan and you're happy to see the Hardys and that company together as a tag team, enjoy it. Because you don't know how long it's going to remain. The one thing that I got from tonight with Jeff Hardy, the one thing that he does not want in pro wrestling anymore, it's not WWE, but what he does not want in wrestling anymore is pressure. It's pressure. He wants to have a limited schedule, do when he feels he can do it, enjoy himself, please the fans. I mean, if any wrestler out there is truly fan friendly, it is Jeff Hardy. And I don't mean fan friendly where he has to come up to everyone and shake everybody's hand and sign autographs till 3 o'clock in the morning. But he truly, truly does care about his fans. Matt also, and a lot of wrestlers do. But you take away that pressure, that emotional pressure, the pressure of having to go from town to town to town to town to town, not getting that much time off. And also because WWE, you're at an elite level. You know, you can't, you know, joke around unless you're absolutely at the top. And even that is very, very limited. So seeing Jeff Hardy happy right now, and again, I've said it 1,000 times, the way he left WWE is not the right way to leave. But, you know, in the case of Jeff Hardy, I guess we could, you know, make a pass. WWE has not been all that spectacular in the management department over the years. Once in a while, we can forgive a wrestler if they go a little bit against the grain. So, all right, got a couple of news tidbits to get into today, and yeah, we're going to get through the show quickly. Don't forget tomorrow night for my channel members, we are going to do live Q&A and chat stream. Starts at 10:05 p.m. if you are interested. Very quickly with a couple of news tidbits. I know this is not normally something we would talk about right at the beginning of the show. And you know what? I changed my mind. We could talk about Joey Janela a little bit later on. The only reason why I actually find his interview with Denise Salcedo interesting is because of what he said and the question that was not asked after what he said about his decision not to re-sign with AEW. Back in January, we already knew that his contract was not going to be renewed with AEW, but we never heard from Joey Janela's mouth why. So we'll talk about that a little bit later. I honestly think that a majority of you tuning in right now are not here to talk about Joey Janela. So we'll get into that a little bit later. No disrespect to Joey Janela, but you're not on TV all that much. You know, you really don't get primetime coverage over here. But we'll talk about it a little bit later. Listen, man, I know the name is goofy, Jericho Appreciation Society. I know if it's spelled maybe a provocative word, maybe we'd feel a little different about it. And yes, for anybody that is interested, let's take the Hardys off the screen for a little while. That is the new shirt that is on sale on AEW Shop right now. The JAS. By the way, Chris Jericho, not AEW, Chris Jericho filed to trademark Jericho Appreciation Society and JAS. So all of that revenue, and Jericho, if he wants to continue using that outside of AEW, he can. Jericho trademarking his stuff. And, you know, for a little fun and laughter, if you checked out Saturday's show, you understand I have to go run and trademark my name and my shows. I don't necessarily have to. I mean, I got a lot of legal opinions from quite a few of you out there, and I appreciate everybody's input. But with Tony D'Angelo now constantly saying he's going to be the Don of NXT, the Don Tony of NXT, yeah, I don't want a cease and desist letter from WWE saying, you can't call yourself Don Tony anymore. Bafangul, I ain't stopping. And yes, I probably legally have the rights as I've been using it for so long, but I don't want to be bothered to get a lawyer and fight it. There could be room for two Don Tonys. If I trademark the name, which I already started the proceedings, I trademark the name, I promise you, I'm not one that's going to send a cease and desist to WWE. Hey, look, I like Tony D'Angelo, but hey, you can't call himself the Don Tony of NXT. Because, yeah, I do wrestling stuff, and yeah, I may not do managing stuff anymore, but I'm not. There's only one Don Tony. I ain't going to do that. I love wrestling. I'm a wrestling fan. I'm going to be a schmuck, an asshole to provoke? Fuck that. I know I have my rights, and you have your rights too. But I got to say something about the Jericho Appreciation Society tonight. And if you notice, not too much in the notes department for here. We're just talking off the cuff, which seems sometimes to be the best shows of them all when it's not too choreographed and thoughts are done in advance. You got to give Jericho credit about one thing. That son of a bitch has the knack of making anything, having anything make sense. I could show you the color green, and somehow Jericho will make sense of why, even though when you're looking at green, it's actually yellow. That guy makes sense of anything, pretty much anything. Now, the story that he told tonight about Daniel Garcia is true. If you remember a while back, very ignorant, naive Don Tony, when I said Daniel Garcia looks like my little nephew, you know, I mean, he doesn't look intimidating on TV. You might remember a week or two after I started doing some research on Daniel Garcia, I talked about his car accident that he had in, I think it was January 6th of 2019. And I know a lot of people out there, they hear January 6th, they think of the Trump fiasco. When I think of January 6th, I think of my dad because that's his birthday. But yeah, he legitimately had a car accident. He was never supposed to wrestle again. And Jericho truly did contribute thousands of dollars for their rehab and recovery. Now, a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, the intentions were not that they would cross paths. But the story he told today was true. As far as bringing 2.0 on Talk is Jericho, yeah, that story is true also. I did get a kick out of Jericho tonight saying, we're not going to call them 2.0 anymore. That was the result of bad creative. And we're going to call them by their names. Now, I got a thought that I wonder if any of you thought about it as well. We had Matt Martell, who was Matt and Jeff Parker. You know, Jeff Parker, Matt. You know, Matt had two different last names, and one WWE and one AEW, but it was Matt and Jeff. Ooh, Matt and Jeff. Why does the name Matt and Jeff kind of like ring a bell? Do you think that maybe out of respect to Jeff Hardy, that maybe 2.0, especially Jeff Parker in particular, said, look, there's only one Matt and Jeff in AEW, and they went with the real names, so you don't call them Matt and Jeff. Just something I was thinking about before. It's not news. It's just me thinking, you know, like maybe that's why they did the name change. I wouldn't be surprised. But they are going to be going by their names now, their real names, Angelo Parker and Matt Menard. Jericho gave them nicknames. I think it was Daddy Magic, Matt Menard, and Cool Hand Angelo Parker. They're going by their real names. Daniel Garcia, he proclaims that he is now a sports entertainer. So the whole storyline is that they're sports entertainers. And ultimately, they will cross paths probably with Bryan Danielson, Jon Moxley, Eddie Kingston, Santana and Ortiz. They're going to go against pro wrestlers. As Jake Hager said tonight, we are the Jericho Appreciation Society, and we beat up pro wrestlers. As Jericho said, we are the Jericho Appreciation Society, and that's entertainment. So they're doing the sports entertainment storyline. And look, man, we have said it a trillion times over. AEW is sports entertainment. You know, just because Eddie Kingston says it's not, it's sports entertainment. There are so many examples of it. Pro wrestling is sports entertainment, period. You think Danhausen wasn't doing magical voodoo shit in Ring of Honor also? You know, it's just to what extent, to what level is it? You know, I saw people bitching and complaining that TMZ covered that Indy Hartwell and Dexter Lumis, along with Peralta and fuck's his name. Shit, I always forget his name. Well, anyway, they were making out on NXT. TMZ covered it. Covered it. And people out there, this is why I can't stand NXT. Oh, give me a fucking break. It was 15 seconds of TV time. You think WWE is complaining? Anybody's complaining? TMZ gave them a goddamn rub. A goddamn rub. And that's what you want. Talk good about me. Talk bad about me. Just talk about me. You know, there's sports entertainment across every platform of wrestling. Every platform of wrestling. So now the Jericho Appreciation Society, everybody is going by their real names. And, you know, even the story that Jericho was talking about, Jake Hager having his back overseas in Dubai also. Yeah, if you look up, all the stories are legit. You know what the conclusion is? There is a lot of appreciation for Chris Jericho in wrestling. And there's a lot of wrestlers who have crossed paths in a very positive way with Chris Jericho that you never see on the air. So there was probably about 30 wrestlers in AEW that Jericho could have put in that group, told us a legit story, and it would have made sense. Would have made sense. So that is the story with the Jericho Appreciation Society tonight. So let's run through AEW Dynamite. Mucho rapido. We had the opening contest. It was Adam Cole and Red Dragon over Adam, Hangman Page, Jungle Boy, and Luchasaurus. I don't know what this means as far as the title hunt. You know, everybody rags on WWE's tag team division, and yes, AEW's tag team division is pretty damn good. But this ranking system is all fucked up. You know, you see the House of Black is pretty much, you know, they had some momentum. It was taken away, and now they're fighting Bear Country and fucking Fuego del Sol on Rampage. Brian Becerra, thank you very much for the super chat, my friend. Dynamite was fantastic live here tonight. Seat got moved and closer to the entrance ramp. Oh, wait. So you got an upgrade in seats. I thought WWE was the only people that do that. Nah, that's cool, man. If they have people on the opposite side of the camera or if there's some empty rows, they move people to different seats. All promotions do that. That's good. I'm glad you enjoyed it, and I'm glad you enjoyed the tribute to Scott Hall, and I think we did a pretty nice one on Monday. You know, 99% of what we talked about was from up here and over here and not from reading a piece of paper or wiki page. So for everybody on the replay, if you haven't checked it out yet, when I go like this, you can check out our tribute to Scott Hall. Went about 40 minutes, but I'm glad you enjoyed it, Bryant. I know on the screen you saw two different super chats because I hit the wrong button. You know, Philip was at Roy yesterday, and it was look at a tale of two nights. A tale of two nights. Raw was boring. Bryant, love Dynamite. I thought Dynamite was fun tonight. I mean, I'm not going to get into the Bischoff comments yet about AEW storytelling because I'm actually going to prepare something a little bit bigger. It has to do with ratings since CM Punk is signed with AEW. I think that tells a bigger story. So probably Saturday for the Don Tony show, we'll get into Bischoff's comments, and I'm going to give you a grid of AEW ratings since Punk debuted. What you will find, and I'll give you a little sneak preview now, is what you will find is that there was definitely a downward trend, without a doubt, with the ratings a little bit after Punk debuted. And, you know, Bischoff said that they plateaued a little bit. But what you see now is a pretty consistent line with AEW. So they're not gaining a plethora of viewers, but they're not losing them either. But I will also say right now, I cringe, I get nauseous whenever I see a website comparing AEW Dynamite's ratings from 1 year ago. I mean, that is the backup. That is the security blanket when anybody talks about AEW's ratings. What they'll do is they'll say, yes, but a year ago, compared to a year ago, they're up 29%, 31%, 30%. But you realize that a year ago, 80% of who you saw on Dynamite tonight were not in Dynamite 1 year ago. Plus, we didn't even have live fans in attendance other than a very, very small group of people. They were not touring. So comparing Dynamite's ratings from a year ago is not legit. It's not. Just like we talked about yesterday on Patreon. I read all these websites talking about the Raw rating on Monday, and they said Raw finished 15th for the night. And if you think I'm making it up, go just look up any of those big sites that break down ratings. They said Raw finished 15th for the night. And when they showed you the 14 shows that beat Raw, 10 of them aired during the day. Two of them aired at 9 and 10 a.m. They're actually comparing it to shows that aired 4 o'clock in the afternoon, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, 11 o'clock in the morning. Am I in the Twilight Zone? So, the opening match tonight, a fun match. Red Dragon and Adam Cole come out on top on this one. You know, usual high spots that we see. One problem I had in this match was Adam Cole. And if anybody tunes into my shows on a weekly basis, I usually defend Adam Cole. What I noticed tonight especially, he's done it before, but it was too obvious tonight. You go back and you watch the match, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. Hangman Page hits the dead eye on Adam Cole. Adam Cole, 10 seconds later, was fine. No longer sold the move. Okay, you want to give him the 10 seconds, that's fine. But what Adam Cole has a habit of doing is he can be laid out on the mat selling a move. But there is no middle ground with Adam Cole. You're either on your feet or you're knocked out, if you follow where I'm going with this. You see some of the more professional wrestlers out there, the ones that are really polished, and they will sell the effects of a move even when they're trying to regain their momentum. What Adam Cole has a habit of doing is he'll stay laid out on the mat. And then when it's time to do what he has to do, he hops right back on his feet. You go back and you watch when Hangman Page hit the dead eye soon as we hit 10 seconds, not getting up slowly and trying to regain his, you know, composure. He just pops up and does his move. Adam Cole then takes the clothesline from Hangman Page. And if you saw, it was pretty brutal, pretty stiff. 10 seconds later, the exact same thing happened. Adam Cole, no middle ground. No getting up slowly, trying to shake it off and then get a little offense. No, he's laid out. And then he just pops right up, almost like a video game. Almost like a video game. You ever play a video game, especially with those older wrestling games, you got knocked out. Hey, hit the A button repeatedly. And then all of a sudden, boop, pops right up. It's almost, he's almost like the wrestling version of an erection. Like, you'd be completely limp, and then you see something hop, boop, he just pops right back up. One cool move, though, we saw a double doomsday on Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly. We also saw a triple moonsault. We had Hangman Page, Jungle Boy, and Luchasaurus all climb the corner rope. Jungle Boy hit a moonsault on Bobby Fish. Luchasaurus hit one on Kyle O'Reilly, and Hangman Page hit one on Adam Cole. But sure enough, Jungle Boy gets beat down a little bit, and this kind of came abrupt. Adam Cole lowers the knee pad, lays the boom onto Jungle Boy, and gets the win. So your winners were Adam Cole and Red Dragon. So we'll see where this goes from here. Keith Lee, once again, on Rampage. By the way, Is enough time gone by that we could start saying, AEW, what the fuck you doing with Jay Lethal again? What happened to AQA? What happened to some of these names? Where is Jay Lethal? I mean, if you remember months ago, we brought that up. We brought it up with a few wrestlers. I mean, is it safe to say that Jay Lethal might be the worst signing that AEW has had so far? And this is not a knock on Jay Lethal, but that guy should be so much further in AEW. I think that is the most unnecessary, wasted signing so far. You might say Andrade, but at least Andrade gets some TV time. I mean, you know, Andrade, whether he's on TV or not, but Jay Lethal, man. Wow, not even on fucking Rampage. So anyway, we get a segment with Keith Lee, Max Caster. They're going to face each other on Rampage. So we see an interview segment with Keith Lee on one side, Hobbs and Ricky Starks on the other. And Ricky Starks is like, I told you not to show up on my show on Friday. And Keith Lee is like, yeah, whatever. You know, you show up again, we're going to kick you. You mean when I slapped you, bitch? Keith Lee trying to act a little PO'd. Just give us Hobbs versus Keith Lee. Whatever. All right, whatever. Chris Statlander is dropping the alien gimmick. She is removing the makeup. It's about time. Chris Statlander being herself, actually, if anybody follows her on the independents, you know, she's pretty good. I mean, the wrestling has definitely gotten tighter and a lot smoother, but the alien thing, you know, just really wasn't going anywhere. Now we get a fun match. Bryan Danielson and Jon Moxley defeating Chuck Taylor and Wheeler Yuta. Wheeler Yuta getting some nice reaction from the San Antonio crowd, taking a beating from Bryan Danielson and Jon Moxley. And something else I noticed tonight. I don't know if you're picking up on it too. A lot of people got annoyed with the number of tope suicidas. It just, everybody was doing it. Dive to the outside, dive to, you know what I'm really getting sick of very, very quickly? Almost every match tonight. It might have been every match. If it wasn't, it was almost every match tonight. What did they all have in common? Boo. Yeah, no. Yay, boo. Yay, boo. Yay, boo. Oh, stop it. We seen that with fucking Isaiah Cassidy and Jeff Hardy. We seen it with fucking Jungle Boy and Adam Cole. We saw it with Wheeler Yuta and John Moxley. We saw it over and over and over again tonight. We saw it, I think, with Wardlow for a little bit with Scorpio Sky. Stop it with that. Every freaking match. Boo. Yay. I know it's interactive with the fans. But go back. Almost every match does it now. WWE is guilty of that too. Absolutely. But they don't do it on every match, so you don't notice it as much. But we got that a lot tonight. I loved William Regal on commentary. William Regal is so smooth. He's got a presence. And he's on commentary while Mox and Daniel Bryan, excuse me, Bryan Danielson, Force Habit, beat Wheeler Yuta and Chuck Taylor. Chuck Taylor, I'm sorry. You know, I know he is beloved by AEW, but outside of AEW, I mean, I don't think he has that kind of following. To me, I don't know. It's like the stunt double for AJ Styles. If AJ Styles ever performed on like a low-budget cable TV show, it's almost like Cameron Grimes yesterday. Yesterday when we did the watch party for NXT, I had people rolling. Go back and watch Cameron Grimes yesterday versus Santos Escobar. I said, Cameron Grimes looks like the cheap stunt double for Daniel Bryan. And yes, I mean Daniel Bryan. If you remember Daniel Bryan, towards his end of his WWE run, when he had the purple tights and he had the you know, not as long hair, and he had a little bit of the beard, but not so much. Cameron Grimes fucking looks like a softer stunt double of Bryan Danielson. Daniel Bryan, go back and watch it yesterday. I looked at it, I said, fuck is this? You remember the scene in Spaceballs that I've always brought up where the stunt doubles, and I think some guy with a beard was doing Joan Rivers', you know, the C-3PO one, whatever? That's what it looked like. And even tonight also. But William Regal on commentary explained the importance of Bryan Danielson and Jon Moxley as a team. It makes sense. I know Bryan Danielson was the number one heel next to MJF and AEW, but those fucking fans love Bryan Danielson. He has been the MVP of AEW over the last 12 months. I know he hasn't been there 12 months, but you know where I'm going with that. He has been the MVP of that company. And even though he's got a little bit of an attitude change, soaking in the fans and everything, he's still doing a lot of the heel offense. But William Regal makes everything make sense. They're also scouting some younger stars of tomorrow. Are they going to be joining up with those two guys? Probably not. Probably not. You don't want, let's be honest, everyone, you don't want Bryan Danielson and Jon Moxley to have a crew of 5-6 younger guys. Not this soon. I'd be fine with them with the tag titles. Not this soon. But what they did tonight was at the end of the match when Bryan Danielson with the stomps to Yuta's face and then Moxley with the bulldog choke, Yuta got some decent reaction from the crowd because he was given some decent offense, and he was taking a lot of abuse. After the match is over, Best Friends is walking up the ramp, and Wheeler Yuta stops, and he turns around, and he walks back to the ring. I guess Best Friends was so offended by that, they all fucking disappeared. You know, I guess, what is it? Wheeler Yuta turned his back on him? I don't know. I thought it was Wheeler Yuta showing a little respect to William Regal and Mox and Danielson, then maybe he wants to join up with them. And he's in the face of William Regal, and William Regal slaps. I never used this word before in the show, but I'll use it for tonight. He slapped the bejesus out of Wheeler Yuta. If Wheeler Yuta had a suntan, after that was done, it turned into sunburn. He slapped him so hard, and Wheeler Yuta stood there and took it. And William Regal's like, sunshine, get out of the ring before it gets worse. But it looked like Regal, Mox, and Danielson had a little respect for Yuta. So we'll see where that goes. But I honestly don't want to see Yuta join up with them as a faction. Let these motherfuckers win some tag gold down the line. So, but it was still, it was not bad. It was not bad. Probably my favorite, you know, like, Wheel of Yuta match so far. Like, I'm like, all right, yeah, it's not so bad. He ain't so bad. FTR cutting a promo. Things got a little bit out of control, out of hand with Tully Blanchard. The Young Bucks show up, and they say, you could fire your manager, you could fire your hairstylist, you could fire your barber, which I always thought was the same thing. You'll always be the second best tag team in AEW. The Acclaimed having a backstage promo there, talking about Caster's match with Keith Lee on Friday. They're interrupted by Ricky Starks and Powerhouse Hobbs. Guys, it's your duty to stop these people coming in trying to take our spotlight. And sure enough, Swerve Scott shows up, who just signed. And the tease is that he's taking their spotlight. So Ricky Starks ain't liking it. So this is kind of setting up a feud with Swerve Scott and Ricky Starks, which will be off the charts. Serena Deeb cuts a promo on Hikaru Shida. Wardlow versus Scorpio Sky. Dan Lambert is shown wearing one of the titles. Sky has the other. This match, what happened is exactly what we all expected to happen. Match went a little slow at first. Wardlow gets the upper hand, is about to deliver a powerbomb symphony to Sky. He hits two powerbombs in the ring. Sky goes outside the ring, and Wardlow, when he's about to hit the third, he gets distracted by Sean Spears, who's coming down the ring with a chair. And while he's distracted by Sean Spears, MJF shows up and throws Wardlow into the corner post. Wardlow selling it, dazed and confused, and Scorpio Sky, ultimate fruit roll-up for the win. So Sky defeats Wardlow. After the match is over, please, this Austin Vandenberg, I don't know if any of you like Austin Vandenberg, but, oh, God. It's like Daniel Puker. It's like, remember Daniel Puter? This is like Daniel Puker. It's like the, it's awful. He's an MMA guy doing goofy forearms. Did you see it? It's like the chicken dance. He's throwing these awful forearms. I know they're from America's Top Team, but, oh, what awful shit. And look, I'm not going to single out every little caca thing in AEW. Every promotion has some shoddy storylines. Every promotion has some great storylines. You could see the gaps in the storyline with Wardlow tonight because they used Wardlow. They used Wardlow to have CM Punk defeat MJF and Wardlow turn babyface. So what happens, Wardlow tonight gets beat down from MJF, gets beat down from this Austin Vandenberg, gets beat down from Sean Spears. And the crowd is yelling at the top of their lungs, CM Punk, CM Punk. If you paid close attention, the commentators no-sold the crowd reaction. All they kept saying, Jim Ross and Tony Schiavone, was, you know, Wardlow, he's a lonely person. No one in the back likes him. They did not mention CM Punk's name, not even once. They no-sold it because that is not part of the storyline right now. Maybe it will be later on. Maybe next week CM Punk does come to the aid of Wardlow. But tonight, there is an example of some not thought out storytelling. Because Wardlow, and I know what AEW is trying to do, Wardlow is going to power himself out of this, and he did, and he almost powerbombed MJF, but Spears hit him with a chair. Awful attempted chair shot to the head. You know he's not going to get hit in the head. Why on a hard camera would you attempt a chair shot to the head just to see Wardlow put his hands up like this? I mean, of course, anybody would try to put their hands up, but it did not look good on TV. It was just unnecessary. You know, if you're not going to do a chair shot to the head, don't even try to do a chair shot. Or don't make it be the focal point where Wardlow is on his knees in the middle of the ring and Sean Spears, here's the windup, here's the pitch, and everybody's looking, and he puts the hands up. So, Jay Cargill cutting a promo, who's going to be number 30. Hardy's over Private Party, which we talked about already. Early on in the match, everybody thought Jeff Hardy was going to hit the Swanton Bomb. Instead, he hit a splash for a two count. And then double twist of fate by the Hardys, followed by the Swanton onto Isaiah Cassidy, and they get the win. Hardy's got a tremendous pop. And again, they're so beloved. Jeff Hardy is so beloved. And the fact that Jeff Hardy was so unhappy in WWE and found happiness, albeit part-time in AEW, that means a lot to AEW fans. It does. And you know what's cool about this? I'm going to just throw it out there now. You know what's cool about this? WWE fans are not ragging on Jeff Hardy. And that's what's cool about it. I know social media is just awful with the way shit is handled, but at least you don't have fans in droves. Wow, Jeff, you don't give a shit about WWE fans, but for AEW, we're not really seeing it. I mean, there's always going to be a scumbag out there, but for the most part, fans are just happy that Jeff Hardy still wants to wrestle. You know, that's a cool thing. What was not cool is after the match is over, AFO comes out. Very, very slow. You knew exactly what was going to happen. They surround the ring. Darby and Sting come out for the save. They get out of Dodge. I guess this is going to set up an 8-man tag. That's where it seems like it's going. I mean, first we have a match on Friday, which we'll get into later on, that actually involves two of these guys. So we have the main event, Thunder Rosa, as we said earlier, winning the women's championship off of Britt Baker. The cage match was okay. I mean, look, the moment itself is cool. We all, most of us, are big fans of Thunder Rosa. Thunder Rosa should have been AEW Women's Champion as early as a year ago, okay? I didn't mind her winning it in San Antonio. It was going to feel extra special, obviously. I don't mind that it was a cage match. What I did mind was the awful use of her over the last 6 months with Britt Baker. I mean, it was a year, almost a year ago with the hardcore match that they had. And that match obviously was entertaining. But, you know, when you see outside interference over and over and over, everyone else in AEW, when you lose, your ranking goes down tremendously. And then you lose again, you're out of the top five. And literally 3 days after the pay-per-view, she's fighting Layla Hirsch to get the opportunity to fight tonight. And I don't care if Britt Baker cuts it in a promo like, why is she getting another opportunity? Yeah, why is she getting another opportunity? See, that's a challenge of writing, good writing. That you have to be able to, you know, answer. You can't, and yes, wrestling, you could do whatever the hell you want. But what led to tonight was extremely sloppy. The fact that you don't even have Jamie Hayter or Rebel attempting to do something. I know Bob from Ringside, all that other shit. Yeah, and there's, you know, you see all the interference in every match that goes on in AEW. But, yeah, even the pay-per-view, as we said, Kevin, good point. Even the pay-per-view. Where was Mercedes Martinez? Was there a food truck outside? Hey, I heard they have good knish. Like, why wasn't she at the pay-per-view? Why is Thunder Rose always making a save for Mercedes, and Mercedes was not there? There was no answer to it. It's a little bit shoddy, if you really think about it. This cage match was okay. The spots, and look, I am, yes, a late bloomer as far as being a fan of Cornette shows, but I know Cornette is going to eat this alive, not just because of the blood, which the blood was fine. The thumbtacks were okay also. But some of the moves that had to be set up were pretty freaking awful. Early on in the match, they were both busted open. For those asking, because Thunder Rosa had on her tights 316, a lot of people immediately thought, oh, that is a tribute to Steve Austin. And it could very well have been a little bit of a tribute to Steve Austin. But to me, that was more that is going to be her, that date is the date she beats Britt Baker for the championship. That's why I believe she had 316 on the tights, to commemorate her winning this title. Now, people are going to, you know, like inflate the importance value of it. The first Mexican woman to win a, you know, established, legitimate, I don't know, from the big promotion, I mean, you know, it's still awesome. I am very happy that they put the belt on Thunder Rosa. There's no shame with Britt Baker losing this title. But, you know, what transpired later on in this match, we had a Fire Thunder driver, but the ref was knocked out. Ref got super kicked from Britt Baker, and why the ref didn't just fall to the ground is beyond me. If you go back, I swear to God, I was laughing. You go back and you watch it. Britt Baker super kicks the referee, and the referee turns around, and he's like, oh, oh. He's almost looking at her like, why? He's standing up, holding his mouth. And then he gets knocked in the ropes, and he's unconscious for 3 minutes. The super kick should have knocked his ass out. Fall to the mat. Roll out of the ring. He literally turned around. He's holding his mouth, looking at them like, why did you do that? So Aubrey Edwards comes in. You know, Aubrey has a little bit of a history with Britt Baker, obviously. You know, getting in each other's face. So we have one moment where a whole bunch of chairs are laid out in the ring, probably about 9 chairs, and Thunder Rosa is suplexed on the chairs. Looked like a pretty stiff shot. But you see, the thing with Britt Baker that I don't like, and most people would not admit it, but you know it deep down inside, when she sets up table spots and she sets up chair spots, even when she sets up thumbtacks, she is so, like, matter of fact about it. She's like, there's a chair. Here's another chair. Here's another chair. Another chair. Oh, let me do it. Show a fucking sense of urgency. She's just gradually. And meanwhile, the first spot, Thunder Rose is laid out in the corner. And if you look, Thunder Rose is like selling the, you know, getting hit. And she's looking in the corner of her eye, looking at the chairs. Okay. Thunder Rosa gets suplexed onto the chairs. Then we get another spot. And this was horrendous. I'm sorry. Anybody out there that thinks this is spectacular, if you're an AEW fan, I totally respect it. Not knocking you. But for people out there that truly have, you know, that try to be unbiased, I mean, you have to call this out for what it was. Thunder Rosa is laid out in the corner. And once again, Britt Baker setting up a table spot. This time it's in the corner. And she puts one table here, one table here, two in the middle. Then she puts two on top of each other. Then she puts another one. And I'm counting, and it's 45 seconds that Thunder Rosa is laid out in the corner watching all this stuff. Then Britt Baker's like, ooh, I got to put her on the middle rope. So she picks up Thunder Rosa, puts her on the middle rope. And for another 45 painful seconds, Thunder Rosa is like, So what happens? The chairs are stacked up on top of each other. This took like 3 minutes. And Britt Baker climbs the rope. And then once again, boo! Yay! Boo! Yay! And I'm sorry, man. I call it like it is. Three times as they're exchanging the punches, you're the chairs. Or you're the chairs. I'm Britt Baker against the cage. And this is what she was doing. She peeked like three or four times at those chairs. I'm like, fucking fall already. So what happens? It reminded me of Shane McMahon when he was on top of that platform that time. She gets hit a little in the cage. And she's like, oh, Calgon, take me away. Some people will get that reference. And she just falls back in the chairs. I'm like, please, man. Seriously. I could only imagine, like, some people out there, you know, that just, you know, even like the Cornettes of the world. I mean, it was just, it was awful. It really was. But then Britt Baker gets the upper hand, hits Thunder Rosa with a chair. And I'm looking at the clock, and it's 9:58. And Thunder Rosa actually asked Aubrey Edwards, if you go back and watch it, how much time we got left? They actually ended up going like two minutes over. So Britt Baker brings thumbtacks in the ring. She puts them everywhere. The thumbtack spot was good. We had a back body drop. Thunder Rosa gets a little bit of the tacks, which was fine. Then Britt Baker, here's another awful thing. She's doing a lockjaw, all right? She takes out the Michael Jackson glove. Now you could see if it was a Mankind glove that had like a piece of metal in the middle to make it hurt more. You think anybody wants a piece of metal shoved down their throat? She takes out like a baseball glove, like a batting glove. Put the fucking lockjaw. People could be like, yeah, but you know, with COVID, they're fucking bleeding on each other. She's literally like trying to pull this batting glove out of her hand and she's trying to put it on. Thunder Rosa ends up biting her finger, pulls the glove off, and then starts slapping Britt Baker's hand into the thumbtacks, which was a cool spot. So meanwhile, Aubrey Edwards had a couple of tacks get in her as well, inadvertently. So we end up, Thunder Rosa hits a Thunder Driver onto the tacks, gets the win. Thunder Rosa is your new women's champion. Well earned, should have happened a while ago. Save me with the, oh, that was long-term storytelling. The fuck out of here. You know, just because, what, Veer? If Veer shows up and gets a win, oh, that was long-term storytelling. Get the fuck out of here. Thunder Rosa has been so misused in that company over the last year. It's about time that she has this title. And let's see the caliber of her opponents versus the caliber of Jade Cargill's opponents. And it's not, yes, it's unfair to Jade Cargill because she is still learning. You never stop learning, but she's still very early in her career. And I'm a Jade Cargill fan, but that's why you don't do that when you have two women's championships. The focus is always going to be compared. It's always going to be compared. All right. Thank you, Chem and everybody else. I try to be honest, man. I enjoy Dynamite. But, you know, I'm going to call Hell in a Cell. You serious? Anyway, Rampage this Friday. And originally I was going to do a watch party. Maybe some of y'all out of the country with a time difference, maybe you still want to be part of it. I'll do it if y'all are interested. Rampage is not going to be on Friday till 11:30 p.m. Eastern, around that time, after NCAA basketball. So, you know, doing a watch party at 11:30 at night, you know, it's not that late, but you know, I'm doing a SmackDown one also. But Friday we have Keith Lee versus Max Caster, Darby Allin versus The Butcher, Layla Hirsch versus Red Velvet, and Bear Country teaming up with Fuego del Sol versus the House of Black. That's what we have for Rampage this Friday. Okay, let's talk quickly about NXT. NXT 2.0 last night. I enjoyed the show. Not everything is ever going to be perfect on that show, or even remotely close to perfect. It's a developmental brand. Last night, yes, we did have a little more WWE influence. The Miz shows up, does Miz TV with Dolph Ziggler, and then we have LA Knight issuing a challenge to Dolph Ziggler for the NXT championship. Dolph Ziggler accepts. So we have that main event match later on in the night to look forward to. In a match to determine a spot at Stand and Deliver, the ladder match for Carmelo Hayes' North American Championship, Santos Escobar defeats Cameron Grimes. Fun match, but you got to go out of your way to just watch 10 seconds of it. You tell me if Cameron Grimes is not Daniel Bryan's stunt double, like a low-budget stunt double. I like Cameron Grimes, but right now it just feels like they don't know what the fuck to do with this guy. So, but the big buzz about the night, besides what went down in the main event, was we had the Mysterios show up. Now, storyline-wise, I was a little curious why the Mysterios didn't try to do anything to The Miz, but okay, whatever. The Mysterios show up, and they have a little bit of a confrontation with Legado del Fantasma. Now, for anybody that isn't aware, back in February, I think it was. It was either January or February. Santos Escobar did an interview. And Santos Escobar said that he would love to have the Mysterios in NXT, even for a short period of time. I truly believe that them showing up yesterday is directly related to Escobar's interview. Yesterday, we ended up having Dominic Mysterio, who still is awful on the mic. Let's be honest, he sucks on the mic. But he's pretty much, he's willing to fight anybody. He ends up having a match with Raul Mendoza. And look, man, I used one of the still shots for my thumbnail. But that match was pretty freaking good. It was good. There was nothing wrong with it. You know, Dominic Mysterio is still a young kid. Dominic Mysterio, I think what we got out of that yesterday is, yeah, he actually probably should be in NXT. You know, but he gets the win over Raul Mendoza. Now, for me, they got to do the match of Santos Escobar versus Rey Mysterio. I don't give a shit about that noise on social media. Those people hate WWE in the first place. They are in so much denial. They still insist that the black and gold was what was best for business for WWE. No, that was best for their viewing enjoyment. That was not best for business for WWE. That was not best for business to create stars of tomorrow. And it's not about trying to ruin Triple H's legacy. It never was. It was not about trying to give the man another heart attack. It's about WWE having to do what they did in the 90s and the 2000s. And they got away from in the 2010s. They have to have developmental. And this is what it is. Getting a rub from some of the main roster guys is a good thing. It is freaking awesome. So give me Santos Escobar versus Rey Mysterio. I think that would be fucking phenomenal. Shout out to Darren Gordon Hill. Happy anniversary to your parents. Much love. Much love. And thank you for showing up at all the watch parties. Your conversation definitely is fun. A lot of people have sent me feedback and they said they like talking wrestling with you verbally. So that was cool. Very cool. So Dominic Mysterio gets the win yesterday over Raul Mendoza. We had A-Kid make his NXT debut, defeating Kushida. Now, there's a little twist with this because Carmelo Hayes was out on commentary during Cameron Grimes and Santos Escobar's match, because that match was a qualifier for the ladder match at Stand and Deliver. So Carmelo Hayes throwing some shade to Pete Dunne, talking about how, I mean, I'm not using his words, but he fucked up Pete Dunne so much that he chased him out of NXT and he had to change his name. Carmelo Hayes throwing some funny jabs at Pete Dunne yesterday. But Carmelo Hayes, yeah, I guess he gets to choose the qualifying matches. And he's so impressed with A-Kid that next week A-Kid is going to take on Grayson Waller. And the winner of that match goes on to the ladder match at Stand and Deliver. Also next week, Solo Sikoa takes on Roderick Strong. Why Carmelo Hayes would be impressed with Roderick Strong, I don't know, but the winner of that match will also go on to the ladder match at Stand and Deliver. So A-Kid yesterday beats Kushida. Excellent match. Tiffany Stratton over Saray. Yeah, that's not very good. Saray with that, now the charm glows. Tiffany Stratton attacks her on her way to the ring, rips the pendant off. And Saray's like, my pendant. And she, you know, does some gymnastic moves. I think that's probably the nicest way we could say it about Tiffany Stratton. But she beats Saray. Not much there, to be honest with you. Indy Hartwell over Persia Perota. After the match is over, we had dueling kissing contests because Dexter Lumis did show up. And apparently Dexter Lumis and Indy Hartwell are not on the splits. He was there to show support for his woman. They start making out. Persia starts making out. And it was what it was. It was 20 seconds. And it got TMZ coverage. I mean, say what you want. Tens of millions of people take it. And you know what? It's funny, and I know I'm going to sound like an asshole for saying this, but it's funny watching some of the people that get so angry at that segment. The first thing I do is I look at their marital status. I look at their dating status. And 9 times out of 10, those people are single and ready to mingle. And I'm saying to myself, no wonder why this person is probably single right now. And so angry to see two people, you know, 20 seconds. And angry. Where they want to break. I'm waiting for the footage of a wrestling fan that was so angry at that segment yesterday that they actually put a baseball bat through their TV. You ever see those idiots that, like, watch a sports game and they actually film themselves destroying their TV? As if Twitter is going to buy them a new one. Oh, you're cool. You ain't got no fucking TV. Main event. Dolph Ziggler retains the NXT Championship, defeating LA Knight. Earlier in the night, we had a little footage of Bron Breakker. I had to take a slug of water. Bron Breakker, you know, the story was that he was not in the building. And he was trying to get revenge after what happened last week with his loss. And I'm getting to Ciampa. I don't want anybody to think I left out Ciampa. I saved him for last. So we think Breakker is not there. And Breakker obviously wants revenge for what happened last week. So LA Knight, Dolph Ziggler, put on a great performance. I mean, look, going back to his TNA days, LA Knight is main roster ready. So he is the guy right now, number one over guy in NXT, other than Tommaso Ciampa. But what ends up happening, towards the end of the match, you have Robert Roode interfering in the match. Basically, you have Dolph Ziggler hitting his finisher, defeating LA Knight. Bron Breakker's music hits, his sirens hit. He comes down to the ring, and he lays out Robert Roode. Bron Breakker issues the challenge at Stand and Deliver for the heavyweight title. Dolph Ziggler accepts. So the whole story of what they're doing with Bron Breakker with the loss leading up to Stand and Deliver seems to be right on course, right on schedule. So, yes, Benjamin, it was funny when Wade Barrett said, I thought this was a PG show. They were just kissing. We didn't see any grabbing. We didn't see any attempts to go to second base or third base. You know, kissing is PG. But the challenge has been given and accepted, so it will be Dolph Ziggler versus Bron Breakker for the NXT Heavyweight Championship at Stand and Deliver. Now, before we get to Tommaso Ciampa, next week's NXT 2.0 has Wendy Chu and Dakota Kai versus Io Shirai and Kaylee Ray for the finals in the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic. The winner of that match will go on to take on Toxic Attraction at Stand and Deliver. So next week, Stand and Deliver's card should be complete. Next week also, Solo Sikoa versus Roderick Strong, as we said earlier. Grayson Waller versus A-Kid. And we're also going to have the Creed Brothers taking on the Grizzled Young Veterans. They have nothing for the Grizzled Young Veterans. The Creed Brothers accused them of the ones who attacked them last week. If you remember the watch party, you already know who attacked the Creed Brothers. So, won't spoil it here. But Grizzled Young Veterans, they deny it. And remember, they were in the finals for the Dusty Classic, so the rematch is on, and they will face off next week. Soon. All right, Tommaso Ciampa. A lot of people last night thought that Tommaso Ciampa is retiring from pro wrestling or leaving WWE entirely. From what is believed by almost everyone is that WWE wants Tommaso Ciampa to remain on the main roster, not only permanently, but they want the fans to forget about the fact that Ciampa is on NXT. Not saying that they want him to forget his history, but they don't want people to think that Ciampa is still going to be showing up in NXT. Ciampa shows up yesterday, very, very emotional, interactive with the fans a little bit. He gets on the mic and he runs down. He's been in the business, I think, 17 years. He said he runs down his NXT career. He talks about DIY. He talks about becoming the champ. He talks about being the most hated wrestler in NXT. He puts over the fans. He puts over his career. He and the crowd, I mean, it felt like the Gargano speech of him leaving NXT. And again, a lot of people yesterday truly thought that Ciampa is leaving WWE entirely. And who knows? Maybe his contract, you know, runs out sooner than what's believed. But from what I was told is that Ciampa, they want him to remain on the main roster and have people, they want clear and concise. They want fans to know Ciampa is no longer going to be in NXT. So Ciampa's cutting a speech yesterday, which sounded like a retirement. And the next thing you know, Tony D'Angelo shows up. He's got a crowbar in his hand. Ciampa turns around. They have a face-off. And Tony D'Angelo throws the crowbar to the floor. And Tony D'Angelo, talking about how he respects Ciampa, and but he obviously wants to make a name for himself, and he wants Ciampa to have one more match in NXT, and that is at Stand and Deliver against Tony D'Angelo. Tony D'Angelo extends his hand. Ciampa accepts the offer. So at Stand and Deliver, it's going to be Tommaso Ciampa versus Tony D'Angelo. And as they're shaking hands, Tony D'Angelo with a low blow, Ciampa is writhing in pain. And Tony D'Angelo is pretty much going to destroy what is left of Tommaso Ciampa. It was me. It was me. It was you. It was me, Austin. So that's where this is going. Remember when Tony D'Angelo said someone is going to sleep with the fishes? This is what he was talking about. So at Stand and Deliver right now, the updated lineup is Dolph Ziggler defending the NXT Championship against Bron Breakker. Cora Jade will be getting a title shot. See, she will be facing Mandy Rose for the NXT Women's Championship. We have the ladder match for the North American Championship. Right now, the only person qualified is Santos Escobar. We have Imperium defending the NXT Tag Team Championships versus MSK. And then we have Tommaso Ciampa versus Tony D'Angelo. So that is your lineup for Stand and Deliver. Pretty solid. Remember, that is WrestleMania weekend. It is Saturday, and I believe it's 12 noon. So we got a lot of shit to talk about Saturday and Sunday. So I probably will do a brief Stand and Deliver recap that afternoon, and then we'll have to come back that night for WrestleMania. So good episode of NXT yesterday, and ratings reflect it. Yesterday they did 624, which is about a 2% increase. And then you could see the other ratings for the other shows as well. You know, NXT, nice, steady, you know, increase, and they're keeping the viewers. So little by little, they're giving everybody that is a fan of NXT something to enjoy. And it doesn't hurt to have a little bit of a rub from the main roster. There's nothing wrong with that. Takes the pressure off of some people. So, good night yesterday. Good night for wrestling. All right. Before we wrap this up, I just want to talk briefly about Joey Janela. It's not a big deal. It's not a big deal. And shout out to, I know. DJ White Sox. A lot of people liked my idea on Monday. If Cody would have showed up on Raw, and a little tribute to Scott Hall, get on the mic. You know who I am, but you don't know why I'm here. Oh, we had fun yesterday on Patreon talking about the Cody stuff, too. It's ridiculous what is going on online. All right, Joey Janela did an interview with Denise Salcedo. It's a name I brought up before. And I found the interview very interesting for one reason. Not many people that are in AEW talk about AEW in detail, other than it's epic, amazing, we're a family, blah, 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 blah. Okay, when you're employed, you're supposed to do that. Back in January, we heard a lot of sites reported that Joey Janela's contract was not going to be renewed. So now Joey Janela did the interview with Denise saying that he's not renewing his contract. So is this more of a, you know, we're letting you go? Well, that's okay because I wasn't going to stay anyway. I don't know. But I want to read you. You'll find this interesting for two reasons. Number one, will Tony Khan pull a big swall on Joey Janela and end up writing something sarcastic on social media? That is a question. And the second one is, and it's just an opinion, a follow-up question that I immediately thought of that was not brought up. Let me read you what Joey Janela said about his decision not staying with AEW. He is not going to re-sign. Pay close attention. And if you think about everything that I've said over the last year and a half about AEW contracts and how thin that they are, I want you to keep that in the back of your mind when I read this. Joey Janela says, and I quote, "My contract is up on May 1st, and I am not interested in signing with AEW. I was a little scared getting back into the indie wrestling world and making money. You take those things for granted. You're getting a paycheck every 2 weeks, a pretty good paycheck. In your head, you're like, shit, when this is over, this is going to disappear. But I was born a hustler in this business. I was scared to get back into that world, but now I'm no longer scared. Back in the day before AEW, I was going out to wrestle for basically nothing. I was just doing it because I loved it. I would do 3 to 4 shows a week. I would rack up small paydays from the promoters, plus my merchandise, and I'd be satisfied. I'd be making a lot of money. But now my price has gone up significantly. So I don't know if the promoters were going to welcome me back with open arms. But recently I've realized that the promoters know the situation. They realize what the situation is going to be, and they've been hitting me up big time. They say, we want you to come back here. We want you to wrestle some of the newer guys we have. We want you to wrestle some of the older guys. We want that Joey Janela back. And I'm happy and I'm satisfied what I did in the 3 years with AEW. It was a learning experience, and I'm going to say it's the most positive way possible without looking negative. AEW, those 3 years, was developmental for the rest of my career. I am so much sharper now, not only in the ring, but business-wise. I've learned so much in those 3 years. Not only am I sharper myself in all facets of the wrestling business, but also I can go to a young guy, I could go to a Nick Wayne, I could teach them some of the stuff I've learned over those 3 years. Or I could go to GCW, or I could go to another promotion and teach them what I've learned on the other side of the curtain. I'm not sad at all. I did everything I wanted to do there. Within 6 months, I started there. My goal was to wrestle Jon Moxley, Kenny Omega, main event TV, main event pay-per-view. I did it all. The only thing I didn't get was an action figure. So be it. It's over now. We're just moving forward. I have no complaints. I thank Tony Khan. I just wish there were more. They've been doing this to people. They've been radio silent on the people. They've been letting their contracts expire. That's why you have talent relations to talk to your talent and tell them what the situation is. If they're going to have a paycheck coming, or if they're going to be signed to a pay-per-appearance deal, which some of the guys have agreed to, I would never agree on a per-appearance deal anywhere. My per-appearance deal is going to be when I'm booking myself all over the world. I am booked in 6 different countries coming up. Per-appearance on the indie scene, I want to be my own boss. That's how I got my name out there. I was my own boss and I had the most buzz on. And he goes on and on and on. I'm not sad about anything. I thank everyone there. All right. My only question is, what was Joey Janela offered? Because if you remember, in January, all the reports were that Joey Janela, his contract was not being renewed. So the question was never asked. Did AEW offer you a new deal? Did they offer you a pay-per-appearance deal? You know, he says that some of the guys that they're not renewing, they offered a pay-per-appearance. Look, would you come back if we paid you like per appearance, like we only pay you when we can use you? Then the question was never asked. Were you offered that? That's number one. If he was not offered that, everything that he said now doesn't matter. AEW was not bringing you back after May 1st. The second thing is, if he was offered an extension, what would prevent him from doing a lot of what he's doing already? Now, he says he was booked in multiple countries, but Tony Khan, with the lower card wrestlers, have allowed some wrestlers to wrestle overseas. So I really don't understand what Joey Janela would be doing now that he was not able to do before. I don't know. But the most important thing is, he never said in this interview that he was offered an extension. And if he was not offered an extension, you know, is this just a matter of, you know, we're letting you go? Well, it doesn't matter because I'm not staying anyway. You know, so I'm curious to see if that question is ever answered. I'm being nice here. I'm not trying to be sarcastic. It's not a gotcha thing. You bring that up, you know, I would think, you know, the first question is, were you offered that deal? And he didn't answer that. He didn't offer it either. So I don't know. But take note of that interview, because there's going to be others like that as well. And I know Chavo has been a little bit outspoken about it. I know, you know, what he said, and I expect a few others. I think when they realize the writing is on the wall, that they're not being brought back, that you know, almost mighty. Look, some of these wrestlers feel that AEW treated them as a mistake. That, man, what the fuck were we thinking 3 years ago when we signed some of these people? That is legit. And if I'm one of those people in denial, like, no, I'm not a mistake. I have value. And then some time goes by and you realize, wow, not only did they, like, not call me or they not did this, and I, you know, it's going to be curious to see if anybody else speaks up about it. So, yeah, so, but that's pretty much it, everybody. We're going to jet out of here. So I want to thank you for joining me tonight. Really good episode of Dynamite. I'm not predicting ratings this week because 2 weeks in a row, I enjoyed the episode so much, I said that I can't see why they can't get 1.1 million viewers. I did find interesting that they announced this afternoon that Jeff Hardy was going to wrestle with Matt. You would think that if they would have prepped that for a week, makes you wonder if some people would have tuned in just to see that match. So I was a little surprised that they announced it literally hours before the event actually occurred. But that could also be like, maybe, you know, it's, they're very flexible with Jeff Hardy. Maybe Jeff Hardy, you know, was not committed to appearing on tonight's Dynamite. I don't know. I'm a little surprised. I was a little surprised that they waited the whole week to announce that they were going to have this match, but it was a fun episode of Dynamite. The time went fast. This was a lot easier of an episode to cover, too. I mean, you got a lot of backstage stuff, which always happens, but this was a very easy episode of Dynamite to take in. And NXT last night was not bad either. If anything negative about yesterday, I think a lot of people were upset. We didn't get Nikita Lyons because she is now, and she knows that she is the talk of NXT, but, she can back it up in the ring. I mean, that's one cool thing you got to think about. She can back it up in the ring. And speaking of, and I'll leave you with this too, because I actually put this in the synopsis for tonight and I forgot to mention it. I believe it is now official that Roxy has signed the deal with WWE and she will be reporting to NXT. So the former Ring of Honor women's champion will be reporting to NXT. And anybody that's seen Roxy's work, she can go. You know, she is another star in the future. Somebody goes down on the main roster, they have a selection of women that they can bring up on a moment's notice if needed. So, yeah. And, you know, look, I saw a few of you writing it earlier. I saw the people clickbaiting that Bron Breakker is being moved to the Raw roster. You know, Bron Breakker wins that NXT championship at Stand and Deliver. I think you could pretty much realize that that was as credible as all the Cody stuff you've been reading the last couple of weeks. Eventually Bron Breakker will be on Raw. You know, eventually, half that roster will be on Raw or SmackDown. If you say it long enough, you end up being right. I could say every week, you know, everyone, you know, I really don't want to bring up passing away, especially after what happened yesterday, but Monday. But, you know, if you say it long enough, it'll happen. So, yes, congratulations again to Thunder Rosa. Very well earned, very well deserved. Wish it would have happened months ago, but now we got to see what the falling out is amongst the camp of Britt Baker. There's been a lot of teasing that Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter will ultimately have a feud with each other. That would be kind of rough because who is the babyface? And Britt Baker, you know, the way she acts, even when she was kind of a babyface, she didn't act or talk like she was a babyface. And no, it's not like a Steve Austin thing where you know, you just act badass and everybody pops for you. You know, that's going to be a little interesting to see who, what sides everybody takes, if that even happens. And what happens with Rebel? What happens with Rebel? I have nothing against Rebel, but to me, you know, she has as much worth as putting on a batting glove as if it's going to make extra effect on the mandible claw, so the lockjaw. But all right, everybody, I'm going to get out of here. If you enjoyed tonight's episode, I would greatly appreciate it if you smash that like button, hit the thumbs up. If you're a channel member here, I will be here tomorrow for you at 10.05 p.m. Eastern. We will do a live Q&A chat, whatever is on your mind. Come in with a blank slate. And then this Friday, we have the watch party for SmackDown at 8 o'clock. And I probably will host the Rampage watch party at 11:30. So if you are a channel member or a patron, you already have the links. If anyone else tuning in or hears this wants to be part of the watch party, just either send me a DM on Twitter at DonTonyD or drop me an email, dontony@dontony.com, and I will send you an invite. The watch party that we do is completely different of what you see on YouTube. On YouTube, you see the host on screen the whole night. You don't get to watch the wrestling. You don't get to listen to the wrestling. Our watch parties, you actually watch the wrestling, you hear the wrestling, and if you want to be on stage, we chat during the night as well. You could text chat if you're a little shy, or you could go on stage, you could talk, you could put video, you could talk without video. It's a lot of fun, and it's pretty epic to think. We've only done it for a week, and it's caught on pretty quickly, so show up. Yeah, I'll talk about Toni Storm on Saturday, you know, with her OnlyFans. I'm not signing up. You know, I'm an engaged guy. I can't sign up for anybody's OnlyFans, but I'll get whatever information I can. I will ask around at anybody who did sign up, and I will get an idea as far as what is offered. $20 is a kind of a steep price to ask people to pay. But I don't know what content she's offering. So I'll get all the details, and I'll share it with you on Saturday. And with that said, I am out of here. Much love, everybody. I will either see you tomorrow night for the live stream Q&A, or Friday for the watch party, or Saturday for the Don Tony Show. Thank you, everybody. Be safe. Take care.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a podcaster. For me to live any other way was nuts. To me, those goody-good people who work shitty jobs for bum paychecks and took the subway to work every day and worried about their bills were dead. I mean, they were suckers. They had no balls. If I wanted something, I just took it. I ran everything. I paid the bills. I paid the hosts. I even paid the masked maniac. Everybody had their hands out. Everything was for the taking. We always called each other good fellas. You would always hear from somebody. You're gonna like Don Tony. He's all right. He's a good fella. He's one of us. But if you're part of my crew, nobody ever tells you they're gonna get rid of you. It doesn't happen that way. There weren't any arguments or curses like in the movies. See, your haters come with smiles. They come as your friends, the people who've claimed they care the most for your life. And now that's all over. And that's the best part. Today everything is different. There's lots of action. I don't have to wait around for everything like everyone else. Oh, I didn't get the vaccine? Fuck you, vaccine me. Oh, your delivery guy has COVID? Fuck you, feed me. Right after I moved here, I ordered egg noodles and ketchup, and I got spaghetti with meat sauce. I'm no longer an average nobody, while they get to live the rest of their lives like a bunch of schnooks.